Hey everyone, welcome to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Today we're excited to have on with us David Tao, president and co-founder at ProChain Capital, a crypto native hedge fund. David, welcome to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Great to have you.
Likewise, thank you for inviting me.
So David, do you mind running us through your background and the events that led you to start ProChain Capital?
Sure. After I graduated college, I attended law school at the University of Michigan. I finished law school in 1999 when the dot-com boom was in the midst of its boom. And I'm a contrarian by nature, so I decided to practice corporate restructuring and bankruptcy. And I practiced at two prominent firms in New York for a number of years, Skadden Arps and Davis Polk, all the while doing bankruptcy and corporate restructuring work, representing debtors, creditors, and other stakeholders in bankruptcy cases. After that, I went to Credit Suisse. I traded distressed debt for a couple years, or I should say distressed securities, inclusive of debt. Usually it's debt that is the fulcrum security in a capital structure, but traded bank debt, bonds, equities, and derivatives, including credit default swaps. And then left in 2009, launched a hedge fund by the name of Maglan Capital. That fund is focused on turnaround and corporate restructuring investments. And about 6 years ago got interested in cryptocurrency. The real reason for my initial interest, to be perfectly honest, was that it was a new asset class. I've been investing for over 15 years and been involved in markets for that period of time. And at this point in my career, I've seen a couple of asset classes begin and then grow and then boom. And the people that are there early on, frankly, are able to do incredibly well simply because they were early participants. And I'd watched a couple of asset classes pass me by, essentially, structured products, credit derivatives, litigation finance. And even though of all of those, crypto was the furthest away from my skill set, it was still something that I thought, if it could have legs, it's something that I'd like to be attached to early on. So I did a bunch of research as much as I could on my own. I'm not a coder. I'm not a programmer. I am not an engineer, but nevertheless did as much as I could on my own. After about 8 months, 9 months, I was able to go ahead and have conviction as much as I could on my own in crypto, and then took the time to find a partner. My partner is yin to my yang. He's a PhD in chemistry from Stanford. He's been involved in systems building his entire life. And he really loves crypto. He was mining Dogecoin, 7 or 8 years ago. So he's an early player in the space. And he sees the revolutionary potential of it from a technical perspective. I see it more from a global business perspective, and less from a technical perspective. And I think together, we make a great team. So I'm sorry, that's a long intro, but that's the full story of how I've gotten to where I am. So about 4 years ago, we launched ProChain in 2018, which was a difficult time for the sector. People in 16 and 17 were incredible bull market geniuses. Everyone was making money in the space hand over fist, no matter how old you were, no matter what part of the world you were from. And then 2018, I think, separated some of the chaff from the wheat. We were able to perform well, thankfully, when we first launched, even through that difficult time. And since then, you know, we've been growing and things have been really robust.
No, yeah, that was perfect. Thank you. So as you know, this whole thing is about, you know, promoting youth financial literacy. And so as you look at the economic backdrop of today and see all the crazy things the Fed and people in higher up positions of power are doing to steer the economy, how would you advise young people today to, you know, like go about investing?
First and foremost, everyone should become a devourer of information. That's when my kids ask me what I do for a living, I tell them I read. It's just, you can only make your own judgment calls after having as much knowledge. Sometimes too much knowledge is a bad thing, but for a young person, certainly they're not at the point of too much knowledge. So reading a ton, not only historical things, but I'd say more importantly, current things, daily things, weekly, monthly, those are incredibly important. Books get outdated so quickly these days. It's crazy. The velocity of world happenings is too fast to try to learn it in a static environment, like a classroom. I don't mean to put down school. I went to a lot of it, and I enjoyed it. And I'm sure, you know, schools today certainly understand the frenetic pace of things, but nevertheless, you've got to read. The second thing I would say is also at the same time as reading, talking to people. And when you have conversations with people, come with questions and ask a lot. And then, I mean, you can talk to people all the time, you know, over webinars and podcasts and things like that. The amount of information and education that's available is enormous. I was watching a webinar today being hosted by a fund. It's an algorithmic yield farming crypto fund. And they did an excellent job inside of, I think, about a half hour to an hour of talking about the strength of DeFi, principles of DeFi, the evolution, and then the future of DeFi. And so I'd say, you know, if you have the tolerance, every waking moment, you should either be reading, or you should be having a conversation, or you should be listening or watching something to educate yourself.
Yeah, I mean, so you talk about reading, talking, staying up to date. So that's exactly what this is. So hopefully we can provide that for someone. Also, still talking.
Can I say one more thing? Sorry. Yeah. The other thing that a young person should do, to the extent that they say that they're interested, if you're interested, do it. You can do it with a few dollars. It wasn't possible. I know I'm going to date myself, but when I was young, I mean, you needed to know a stockbroker. There were no online brokerages, and there were trading fees, which there are none today. And so certainly, you know, you can run a portfolio off of a phone these days. So you should definitely be doing it. Definitely. Not even for purposes of developing a track record that you could show to someone and wow them. More importantly, you need, if you want to be in the markets, it's not a vacuum. It's something that develops every single day and breathes. And you need to be a participant in that world in order to have good and engaging and educational conversations about that world. Again, it's not something that's static. You need to be an active participant in it.
Yeah, for sure. So going back to what you were saying about, you know, staying up to date, talking about, you know, the current state of everything, we hear a lot about inflation these days. Should we be worried about that? Like the younger generation, is that, how is that going to affect us, you know, in the future?
I don't think you should be worried about it. We'll all survive and live through it. It's funny that it's something that's never been heard of by young people. All right. You read about it in textbooks, or maybe you've learned about it in macroeconomics class. So I lived through inflationary periods in my life. And again, I'm not that old, but there hasn't been any inflation for an incredibly long period of time. Certainly not the likes of what we're seeing right now. You know, I think as some of the things, let me focus on a couple of elements that I think are going to take the inflation heat, is going to come off by itself. And what I mean by that is, so first of all, the Federal Reserve's involvement in the economy is clearly you know, coming down. And it should. I mean, it's been around for a really long time. You're talking about, you know, since before 2008. So it's an incredibly long run that the Federal Reserve has been in a very accommodative state. And it needs to be in a more normalized state. So we're going to get there. There's going to be bumps along the way. There's going to be a ton of volatility in every market, you know, until everybody gets comfortable with what, I don't know, the new world or the real world or the normal world, whatever you want to call it, is going to look like. So that those are serious, you know, moves. They are going to take time to digest. So I think that that's one thing that is by itself going to go ahead and take a bunch of the inflation fire, you know, down. The other thing, though, is the supply chain. This is going to get worked out. I mean, it's not going to get worked out overnight. It may take a year. But once the supply chain is back up and running, again, I think inflation is going to come down. I think there are two parts of the supply chain. There's semiconductors and chips, and then everything else. Semiconductors and chips is critical for so many devices and, you know, vehicles and everything that we have. So the ramp up in chip making is really important. And there's a ton of money going into it. And there's going to be more chip development. And, you know, as with most things, the pendulum is probably going to swing too far. And there'll be an overcapacity at some point, and chip prices are going to collapse and whatever it is. But at the end of the day, chips are really one big piece of the puzzle. The second big piece of the puzzle is just supply chain overall coming back after COVID, you know, and ports freeing up and, you know, kind of supply chains getting back to normal. And I think that that's going to happen. People are working very hard at it. Our government will throw a lot of money at it for a while. But I think that that's really, you know, a 12-month issue. The Federal Reserve is probably a more of a 24 to 36-month issue. But nevertheless, you know, I think all this is not going to destroy, you know, the economy in any way.
Okay, so two questions about that. So earlier you talked about the Fed having to go back to a more normalized state like they were before 2008. Can you go into exactly what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, look, there are a couple things. First of all, let's go to bond buying for a second, right? So as the Fed uses its balance sheet to go ahead and buy assets that are out there in the market that otherwise would be mopped up by normal institutional investors, sovereign wealth funds, and so forth, the Fed's out there, you know, arguably one of the heaviest balance sheets in the world, and is out there buying, which means that the rest of the capital in the market essentially gets pushed to the deep end of the pool. They're in the shallow end, the safe end, and all the capital, you know, is pushed elsewhere. And because they're buying, yields are so low, in addition to the fact that they're setting interest rates really low. And so therefore, investors of all stripes are encouraged to take more risk than they would normally. So if you're a buyer normally of investment grade bonds, you're now going to be a buyer of high yield bonds because you need to reach your hurdle or your expected return. If you're generally a blue chip equities person, you're going to move further along the risk spectrum and so on and so forth. As the Fed exits the pool, right, and the water goes back and the investors move back to where they were beforehand, obviously there's going to be some selling in the riskier assets, because that capital is rotating to safer assets, or, you know, what people consider safer assets, because they are earning more now than they did before when the Fed was involved. So you have two aspects of the Fed. The one is the buying of bonds, right, or the buying of assets generally, that the Fed has stopped. And then secondly, the accommodative interest rate that it gives to, you know, interbank loans, which then sets interest rates for everything else. And so the Fed is now going to go ahead and have rates rise. And therefore, you know, rates will rise on everything, on bonds being issued, you know, bank borrowings that are going on, mortgages, you know, any fixed income instrument that there is. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. So you don't seem very, you know, scared about any potential ripple effects what we're going through might now have on us in the future. But do you still think, you know, investors today, or maybe even younger people, should, you know, take measures to protect themselves from that, i.e. crypto?
Oh, wait. Okay. Let's unpack the question in a couple of different ways. So first of all, the reason I'm so calm is because I've lived through a few of, you know, crazy times, right? I lived through 2008. Yeah. I lived through 2001. So I've seen mayhem. So it's all part of the cycle. Not to say that I, you know, I don't shudder in fear when the market, you know, is down 1,000 points in a day. I certainly do. You know, I'm not cool, but, you know, on the other hand, it's to be expected. It's part of this world. You cannot expect to always be making money.
Right.
That's not a good plan. I mean, you should certainly strive for that, and hopefully, you know, you'll be one of the few that's able to achieve that. But, you know, I think most people, you know, need to be prepared for things like this. So yes, you go ahead, and certainly you should not be all in on any day of the week, right? But then with respect to the end of your question about crypto, I don't think trying to be measured here. I don't think crypto is a safe haven. It's a safe haven certain things potentially, right? And I'm a believer in this. I do believe that crypto should be an asset of safety in times of currency weakening or currency collapse.
Okay.
Right? So let's just take as an example, what's going on in Turkey, right? Everyone's bailing out of the lira and they're putting their money in Bitcoin, right? That's an extreme, extreme example. Mm-hmm. You know, in the United States, we're the world's reserve currency. Frankly, I hope that never changes. It's really important for the quality of life and the benefits and rights and status in the world that we get by living here. So I think that that's a great thing. On the other hand, you know, is a Bitcoin potentially a hedge against inflation, currency weakness? Arguably, yes, but there's so many other aspects to cryptocurrency beyond just being digital gold that drive the price as well. Maybe one day we'll get to that where it's purely digital gold. That's the only reason people invest in it. But for now, I mean, you know as well as I do, the technological revolutionary upside that exists in cryptocurrency is also part of the story, maybe even a bigger part of the story. So on a day like today, where the NASDAQ, which is tech heavy, swoons and drops, you know, over 2% during the day, you know, we got to be nuts to think that, you know, crypto is going to hold rock solid, you know, the gains that it had in the morning, you know, through the afternoon. I mean, it just, gotta be honest that right now, you know, crypto, at least for the majority of investors that are in it, and certainly the daily trading that's going on in it, you know, is more of a tech play right now than it is digital gold play.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, by the way. I just want to clarify. I don't see crypto as, you know, a totally safe bet.
You're not supposed to give your opinion. You're the interviewer. Tell me what you think. You're interviewing me. Right. Put me under the gun.
Okay. All right. So you lead me to my next question. So as you said, many refer to it as digital gold. So, you know, do you see it as that, or is that just, you know, a catchy marketing phrase?
I think it's one aspect of it, but it has use cases, right? So we could argue gold is not gold, because it's used in jewelry, right? And it's used as a precious metal in certain, you know, electrical stuff that I don't really know about. But so similarly, there are use cases for cryptocurrency beyond just the store of value. And so now the question is how much of the value is ascribed to the use, and how much of the value is ascribed to the store of value aspect of it? And so I do agree that there's certainly some level of it. The Bitcoin maximalists that are out in the world definitely agree that the real storyline with Bitcoin is store of value, right? They firmly believe the anonymity of the founder, the scarcity of it, you know, all these things, you know, provide immutability of it, provide the construct for it just being a store of value. I think other cryptocurrencies, I think everybody agrees that there are enormous use cases, you know, for every other cryptocurrency other than Bitcoin and maybe Monero.
Yeah, totally. So do you appreciate crypto more for the use case aspect or the gold aspect?
So I appreciate Bitcoin for its first mover status, its most widely held status, some of the features that are unique to Bitcoin that no cryptocurrency will ever be able to replicate, right? The anonymity of the founder is enormous. The scarcity and the finite nature of it is a big deal. And the first mover status, that's it, it's done. So to me, there is something, those things are unique to Bitcoin that, you know, are not applicable to anything else. And therefore, I am, at least for the near to medium term, very bullish on Bitcoin. And there are, you know, rightfully or wrongly, there are enough humongous names in tech that are all in on Bitcoin to the exclusion of everything else. They're out on the rest of the stuff, like, you know, what happened in the end of January about, you know, the argument between Dorsey and frankly everybody else that's, you know, Web3 focused. You know, Dorsey's focused on Bitcoin and everybody else is focused on everything other than Bitcoin. I don't think at this point, you know, I have enough wealth to go ahead and pick a single horse in this race. I'd rather be exposed to, you know, all horses at this point. And then what's going on in the DeFi space, the development that's going on there is almost dizzying. I can't keep up with all of the development, the lingo, which tokens, which currencies are functioning better, are preferred, level one, level two. It's an enormous amount of activity. Thank God I have a partner, you know, that's very well entrenched in that world, and, you know, rebalances our portfolio, you know, pursuant to, you know, the daily or the weekly machinations in all that. But I certainly, you know, I have more conviction in Bitcoin than I do in Ethereum versus Solana versus Avalanche versus, you know, the list goes on.
Okay. So you made the point that, you know, the crypto market, it's all over, right? Like the market's never closed. There's always new projects. So I want to ask you, like, how do you look into, you know, finding a new project to invest in? Like, how do you decide this is where your money should be?
So we have a few themes in our portfolio, and we haven't spoken a lot about, you know, what is it actually that we invest in? I mean, we obviously invest in cryptocurrencies. That's come through in the conversation, but we also invest in equities. We invest in stocks of companies that are involved in crypto, digital assets, and so forth. So we have, you know, we have a sizable position in Visa and in MasterCard and in Coinbase and in Square. So for NFT exposure, we actually like Visa and MasterCard. We think that they're actually going to, you know, go ahead and take over some of the transactional activity that happens in the NFT space. It's not very easy to get on the point of NFTs. So we're not invested directly in NFTs, but what we want to be involved in, because NFTs, you know, a single asset, a single you know, Bored Ape or, you know, something along those lines, is too speculative for us. It's not mm-hmm. something that our investors are, you know, interested, you know, using us to invest in those types of assets. But what we want to be invested in is, you know, the exchanges, the platforms that are helping trade those or invest in those. So, you know, we use the public markets and then the private markets. We're invested in a number of private enterprises as part of our portfolio that are invested in the NFT space generally. I'm getting to your question. I'm going to get there right now. So miners, right? So we get a lot of good deal flow, thankfully, because Justin, my partner, is a day one crypto guy. So he really knows. It's a small community. By the way, your audience should know the crypto community, although the people make a lot of noise and it sounds like there's millions upon millions of people doing this every single day, it's really not that big. The people that control, you know, the real movement, the real money, the real development, it's a pretty small community of people. Mm. So in any event, we get deals, you know, shown to us pretty often. And, you know, one of the spaces that we've used the private side of our portfolio to invest in terms of, we like to invest in themes. We want access. We want exposure to DeFi. We want exposure to NFTs. We want exposure to mining. So on the mining side, we've found the best value for our investable dollars to be in private companies. So not necessarily, you know, the public companies that are out there like Marathon, let's say, who mine Bitcoin, but we found some more interesting, better value compelling investments on the private side. So now to your question about what we look for when we invest. So I come from a very fundamental point of view in terms of investing, as opposed to, I'd say, most crypto investors, which are focused on, you know, very long-term visions. I need to know, when are you going to be cash flow positive? If it's a business, right? A miner, right? You're going to set up these rigs. This is your cost of power. How soon until you're free cash flow positive? And we talk to the management team. We meet them face to face. We have a couple of rounds of discussions with them. They really need to know their business. And then they also need to know, how are they going to make me money? I don't mean to sound like Kevin O'Leary, but how are they going to make me money, right? How long is it going to be until there's going to be a monetization event? And if they don't have an answer to, well, what's the plan, right? Is it going to be an IPO? Are we going to sell the company? Are you going to go ahead and do some sort of other financing activity that's going to go ahead and generate, you know, returns to investors? If they don't have an answer to that and just they're like, well, we'll play this by ear, that's not for us. And it's fine. I don't knock them for having that answer. That's totally fine answer. It's just not a good answer for us, because our investors are not, our money is not 10-year locked up money, right? It's not VC Andreessen Horowitz money where, you know, they don't expect a monetization event until 10 years from now, you know, at 40X, right? We're looking to generate, you know, returns within, on the private side, a year or two, right? That's our horizon. So, you know, it's really practical questions that we go ahead and ask the teams that we're investing in.
And this applies to everything, right? Not just crypto?
Yeah, everything.
Yeah.
We wouldn't invest, for instance, in someone developing a token. That's totally not going to be what we're going to do. We'll go ahead and just buy that in the secondary market. We'll miss, you know, the early stage run up, whatever that may be, until it's, you know, issued. Excuse me.
Yeah. So also a little bit back, you talked about NFTs. I understand, you know, your company's not interested in specific NFTs, but personally, what's your take on it? Is it a fad or is it here to stay?
The NFT universe is here to stay. The NFTs itself, fad.
Okay.
If you think that a Bored Ape is going to have the longevity of a Rembrandt, I think you got to be crazy. I'm not an art lover, but, you know, I've been around, and I'm sure you, even as a, you know, a high schooler, you've seen fads come and go. I don't know, rollerblades. Everyone had a pair of rollerblades when we were, and I'm a hockey player, so I, you know, I enjoyed rollerblades. But they were all the rage once upon a time. Now you see a pair here, a pair there during, you know, times that there are good weather. We used to, you know, collect all sorts of cards, not just baseball cards, basketball cards, but other, you know, weird garbage pail kids, all sorts of stuff, or, you know, Beanie Babies. These things, they come and go. I think Peloton is a fad. You know, I don't think people are going to be riding stationary bikes for forever. And I'm a bike rider, by the way, both mountain and road. I just don't think it's, you know, it's one exercise, right? Or it's, you know, in the case of, you know, the apes, you know, it's an ape. Okay, great. You know, when the next cool thing comes along and, you know, celebrities are, you know, buying up something else, you know, so be it. I mean, I think there'll probably be a couple of iconic works maybe, but they'll turn over. But the NFT world, I think, is here to stay. You know, digital display of something that you own, I think, is a real deal. Starting in 2022, I don't know if you saw the story, starting in 2022, Samsung TVs will have NFT display capability.
Oh, yeah?
Do you know what percentage of the world's TVs are Samsung? I didn't either. I had to look it up. 1/3 of the world's televisions are Samsungs. Yeah. So, I mean, for Samsung, I'm sure they're already trying to figure out, I mean, TVs, you know, your generation, you don't watch TV, right? You watch your phone or your tablet or whatever. I don't know. My kids do, right? But Samsung is trying to figure out right now for sure how they're going to go ahead and manufacture TVs or display panels, essentially is what they are, that are going to look beautiful and display NFT artwork beautifully, right? And that for that, that makes total sense for them. I mean, it's in their business already. It's not like they have to develop something new. They just need to develop a beautiful way to show it. So no, I think NFTs are definitely here to stay. On the other hand, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of booms and busts in the space. God bless to those people that make a lot of money in NFTs.
Yeah. Also, about your Samsung point, I just want to say they already started doing that. I mean, my dad he's very into photography, so he takes a lot of pictures. And we recently got a TV that like doubles as like a picture frame. So cool. But anyway, so do you have an opinion on, you know, this might be a question for your partner, but on what might be the most groundbreaking development in crypto in 2022?
This coming year, I'm going to say regulatory stuff. And I know that that's boring to most people. And it's boring to me, too, even though I'm a lawyer. It's really important because everybody's calling for regulation. It's a good thing. It's certainly going to go ahead and take away corners of the market where you can make a lot of money right now. Because of a lack of information and a lack of disclosure and a lack of, you know, kind of rules on trading, on, you know, buying and selling and things like that. But there needs to be regulation. And so I think that that's going to be the biggest news of 2022. And it's just a question of how it comes about. It seems that the SEC is not going to immediately put out rules and regulations, and they're going to go ahead and just sue companies that they think are not doing the right thing, like the same way, like the way they sued Ripple. But I think that they're going to get, they're very concerned about DeFi, very. And so I think they're going to be some lawsuits. I don't think there are going to be lawsuits against the biggest players. I think they're going to try to find smaller, more vulnerable players to go ahead and fight with. And as a result, you know, we will see regulations start to be formed either by the SEC and CFTC or by lawmakers, by Congress.
Okay, so given that regulation that you're predicting, do you have any price targets or projections rather for Bitcoin or any of these other?
I think the trajectory is just up. I don't know. I hope we get to 100,000 this year on Bitcoin. I hope we get to somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 on Ethereum. I don't know if there's going to be, a Solana of 2022 or, a Binance USD of 2022. I don't know. I mean, certainly always expect the unexpected, but I think there's so much competition now in the DeFi space that I don't know if there's going to be one horse that's going to be able to run away so far, so fast from the rest of the pack.
Okay.
Or, go from startup to, being in the top five.
Yeah.
Other people are calling for 2022 to be the year of NFTs. I don't know if that's the case. Could be. There's always, I think, and the year of the NFT will be every year, right? There'll just be a new NFT every year. That'll be super hot. My prediction is just upward.
Okay. Sounds good. I think we'd all like that. So, do you think it's important for kids to learn about crypto and why? So,
it's definitely important because it's here to stay. It's going to revolutionize all assets, right? So, if you talk about, I lived before the internet. So before the internet, there was little digitization of anything. The advent of the internet allowed for, I don't know if your viewers, are familiar with the parlance of Web 1, Web 2, Web 3, but essentially it digitized information. And then it digitized, let's call it conversation. We're now at a point where, to me, it makes what's happening now should have happened a really long time ago, although technologically it couldn't. But from a 50,000, 100,000 foot view, the digitization of assets should happen before the digitization of information, because information is constantly changing. Assets don't change, right? A stock is a stock. A car title is a car title. You go down the list, these are all static things. They're not changing each and every day. Mm-hmm. Contract rights a little bit more, right? When you get to smart contracts and things like that. But we should have digitized those things a really long time ago. And we should have had immediate transfer and, immutable title and, definite nature of things and no hacking. And this should have happened a really long time ago. If you think about it from an evolutionary standpoint, not from a technological standpoint. So since this is something that's really, the idea probably was in a lot of very smart people's minds very, very, very long time ago, just there wasn't the capability to do it. So that's why since it's so logical at this point and the technology is there and the thoughts have been there for such a long time, it's going to happen so fast. So I think, I am probably going to be surprised as to how fast it happens. So I think it's important, to your point, for people your age to learn about crypto. Also I don't know if necessarily from a technical standpoint. In other words, I have no interest in becoming a technology junkie, right? I don't know how the internet works. I mean, I don't mean to sound silly, but we all use it every day. And very few people know exactly how it works, right?
Right.
Programmers know how it works. Crypto is just going to be part of society. I don't think it's going to happen very fast. It's going to be very fast adoption. Most people won't even know they're using it most of the time. And that's it. It'll just be ingrained in society. So I think it's important to know about it because it's important to know about the technological changes that are going on. But to take a step away from that, because I think in your question, there's another question, right? Because when you ask your question, should you know about crypto? should you know about crypto from a technological standpoint, or should you know about crypto from a financial standpoint? So I answered the technological standpoint. I don't think you really need to know the technology. You need to understand some of it because you need to have a conversation with other people, and you kind of need to know where the industry is going. From a financial standpoint, I think absolutely, right? Like, there is no home econ basics that's being taught to people. And I think a lot of young people are teaching it to themselves, and kudos to them, you know? But crypto is not the whole world. I actually think the reason our portfolio is built with cryptocurrency capability and also equities is because I think a lot of crypto projects are eventually going to make their way to the stock market. Like, I don't think they're just going to remain in token land forever or in cryptocurrency land forever. The equity markets are so old, so tried and true. Once the regulation on some cryptocurrencies looks exactly like the regulation on stocks, well, then what's the difference? Might as well be a stock and list it on the market, right? At the end of the day, if you have a good business, it's going to be valued properly. So I think it's really important to understand, you know, valuation, markets, economics, finance, you know, so on and so forth. And if your entree to that is through cryptocurrency, bravo, that's awesome. You can go through any door you want to get into that world, but you got to get into that world more broadly, right? Because your whole world is not going to be cryptocurrencies. You're going to have to one day, you know, pay your student loans, buy a home, finance some stuff, whatever it is that you're going to do in life, and you want to go ahead and invest your money, and your money is not going to 100%, please God, Alex, do not invest 100% of your money in crypto. You know, so you need to be, you know, you need to have a broader view so that you can, you know, pick your spots, you know, strategically.
Yeah. So how do you suggest people do learn about it that are wanting to, like, do you prefer watching things like this, reading about it, or, you know, hands-on approach, or a little bit of both?
Everything. Like I said, at the very beginning, you got to be a lover of information, taking it in all day. And then at the same time, you got to put it to use, because there's nothing like, you know, practical experience. You got to make mistakes. You got to fall on your face. You got to have days that you, you know, cheer and you think you're on the top of the, on top of the world. There's no substitute for that. So you got to do both. It's really important.
Yeah, I totally agree. So David, I think we've used up most of our time. So I think that's a great place to end off on. Thank you so much for coming to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. I really enjoy this.
Pleasure is mine, Alex. Great, great stuff. Good luck with the project, and your audience should be really happy.
Yeah, thank you so much. So is there anywhere, you know, people can find out a little more about you if they wanted to?
Oh, of course. So you can find me on LinkedIn. My name is David, D-A-V-I-D, Towel, T as in Tom, A-W-I-L. The fund name is ProChain, and I'm pretty prolific on Twitter. My handle is David D, as in Daniel, Towel, David D Towel on Twitter.
Yeah, awesome. So I encourage everyone who's watching to go look into that. And also for everyone listening, as always, you can visit us at cryptorabbithole.net or on Twitter at AP_rabbithole. And see you next time. Thank you.